must feel pretty confident with that additional bulk he's put on. Now watch the defence, it'll be fairly violent, I would imagine.
And now the Gladiators, Hopewadi with the left forearm. It was as nasty as we've seen for a long time.
A little bit out of character, he's a very clean player.
Manly slumped to eighth on the ladder.
It's just rubbing salt into the wound.
You can see the head clash there.
Oh, very nasty.
The crowd love it. They've all taken their angry pills. This smashes him to ground. The one-handed pass back inside.
With a delicate kick.
He smacked their bottoms with a beautiful bit of football early. Thank you, Mrs. Robinson. Another little slanging match.
He's only 5 metres from the line.
And he's hurt on the bird. He runs into a wall.
Certainly got some forearm in it for some damage done to him with a boot or a knee. But my heavens, he's really bleeding.
He's come out of it very much the worse for wear.
Bleeding like a stuck pig out there.
And the crowd starting to go wild.
Intercepted. Shows it. Goes outside. Steps again. He gets it down. It is a try.
Yes, it's a try. It's a sad, sad commentary on the mentality of some of the idiots that follow Australian sport.
Now, please welcome your muscle-bound maestros, Stephen Ferris and
Chris Gayle,
as they fire up.
Unfortunately, we've developed a culture in our game of blaming match officials for a loss. It sets a terrible example to fans and a terrible example to grassroots, and it's got to stop. It's time for the game to grow up.
Amy, it's fantastic to have you here on Fire Up. We're already much the better for your presence. Now, that was Todd Greenberg telling, I think, North Korea to grow up, I think, because I think they've shot another missile over Japan this morning, and it's good to see that he's concerned about geopolitics, not just about rugby league. But, of course, welcome to Fire Up, and it raises the question immediately, where is Stephen Ferris? Now, I think for those of long-term followers of the show, they'd recognise that Stephen and I, on every 50-50 call involving the NRL against players, always come down on the side of the players. We're very, very player-centric. We go, we'll call out the likes of Gallup, Chairman Smith, Todd Greenberg, the North Korean commentator himself, and say, we are for the players. Until Stephen gets a call from the NRL that involves money. So, is it a coincidence? He's, you know, the Panthers are playing the Broncos. He's a DJ. They have music at the game. Has he sold out to the NRL? This is a question that I haven't got an answer for, Amy, at this particular point in time. But we've got to replace him. We've got to go out and find someone that can do this man's job. And it's not an easy task. You've got the technical part. Do you feel competent?
I think I'm ready to go. I think so far there's noise going to air.
Excellent. You're feeling confident?
It's a good start.
I'd say enthusiasm is at a high.
Excellent. Okay, so we need someone from the rugby league commentary point of view. So we're looking for someone with deep knowledge of the game, someone who has a passion for their team in particular, empathy for all other rugby league fans, with the exceptions of South Sydney and the Roosters, of course, an ability to ask the hard questions and to have a balanced view of matters like the issues that came out of the Sharks-Cowboys game last weekend. Unfortunately, Buzz Rothfield is not available, so we've got Bronco Reg. Good morning, Bronco Reg. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. I'm very well, thanks. I'm fired up and I'm ready to go.
I like the way you talk, Reg. You're already doing particularly well.
Thank you very much.
And look, we need more help, and we've got help physically in the form here in the studio. There's been a little publishing company that's provided about 50% of the content of our show so far this season. That, of course, is Stoke Hill Press. And we have the supremo from Stoke Hill Press, Jeff Armstrong, in the studio this morning. Jeff, how are you?
I'm very well. It's a career highlight.
Compared to what?
No, I work in publishing. This is a career highlight.
We're going to be talking to Jeff a little bit later about the content that he so happily provided for us this season, but we're talking the likes of the heads, the writers, the mascots, the big hitters in rugby league. Speaking of big hitters, were you gentlemen aware that it was a little bit of a post-elimination incident amongst the Manly Warringah Seagulls during the week?
I've heard there was the fight of the century between the two assistant coaches at the Manly Warringah Seagulls. Is this correct, Chris?
I think that is correct. Reg, can I walk you guys through it? And I'm very interested in your opinions about it. So there's been a staff between Manly staffers, as in Manly Warringah Seagulls, Manly staffers Willie Peters and Dan Ferris Dan Ferris?
He's got his fingers in a lot of pies, Ferris, doesn't he?
I think this could be the explanation of where Stephen Ferris is this morning. Let's go into it. So there was a fight between the two gentlemen, Peters and Ferris, after a wild night in the rocks, and it could lead to the pair being sacked by the club. The NRL is awaiting a report from Manly following revelations that Sea Eagles assistant coach Willie Peters and the club's head of high performance, Ferris. Well, that's an expression you don't normally associate with Stephen Ferris, do you? High performance. But we're in a fight, involved in a fight outside the Orient Hotel. Police were called to break up the fisticuffs and issued an infringement notice to Peters for offensive behaviour. Neither of them have cooperated with police inquiries. Just reading on, it says, Ferris and Peters were among those responsible for guiding Manly to an unexpected finals appearance when most pundits predicted the Silver Tails would miss the playoffs. Where were you on that, Jeff? Had you thought Manly have another dud year?
Look, I think any time that Manly gets knocked out in controversial circumstances is a wonderful year.
It's been good for the game.
Absolutely.
Can I just ask important, who won?
Well, of course, you know, neither is cooperating with the police, so the decision remains with the judges.
My information on that is that they still have to consult the CCTV footage.
That's
and
right.
They can't make a decision on who won or lost until that's gone to the bunker.
Well, the problem is that $2 million a year, the bunker only operates during the game weekends.
I know, so the bunker's 24/7.
Is it 24/7? I don't think they've got the budget for it. Yeah. So if there is a fight, they can't look at it if it happens on a Tuesday evening. And I mean, Todd Greenberg, are you listening?
Chris, what do you reckon they were fighting about?
Well, there's a couple of possibilities here. If we look into what they're good at, that might provide us with a little bit of a clue, Reg. So Ferris has been credited with whipping the players into shape and reducing the amount of soft tissue injuries, while Peters has helped head coach Trent Barrett prepare the side alongside fellow assistant coach John Cartwright. So I think if we look at the two expertise of the players, there's a couple of issues that come to mind that they might have been fighting about. So have you guys heard anything about the post-match stoush that's been going on between the two respective sets of cheerleaders?
It sounds juicy. I've heard that that Scott Penn, the CEO of the Manly Ringer Seagulls, was blowing up Deluxe, to use a phrase that the opposition players' cheerleaders were allowed to cheer at the game, and he wasn't happy about it.
Yeah, that's right. So ostensibly what happens in the first round of the playoffs at the moment is that the home finals, if they're in Sydney, get allocated to Allianz Stadium. So it was a Manly home final, but the Pantherettes were there going up head-to-head, so to speak, against the Manly Warringah Seabirds. And Scott Penn has blown up Deluxe about this. He says, this is inappropriate. Why were they there if it's our home final? I mean, Jeff, it raises an immediate question. Given the huge crowds that we saw last weekend at the football, at Allianz Stadium, I think it, to me, what it did beautifully was reproduce what it's like to go to a Roosters game by being basically empty at the semi-final. There's a push to remove this issue about cheerleader gate and take the first round of the semis back to home ground. Should those games have been played at Lotto Land and the SCG down in the Shire for the Sharks' home final against the Cowboys last weekend?
I think they should have been played at the Cricket Ground.
Is that right?
Well, if they played them at the Cricket Ground, the Swans would then have had to play at Lotto Land or Shark Park. We wouldn't have had this worry about the crowd comparisons. But I just go back, when I started watching St George play in the 70s, their cheerleaders were the Illawarra Drum Majorettes.
Yes.
And they were magnificent.
They were absolutely magnificent.
But then the Pantherettes came out with this sexy new line in the early 80s and ruined everything.
And the Majorettes, they sort of had those hats, didn't they?
And
the
high-stepping
and the baton twirling.
Yeah. I mean, rugby league pre-match entertainment's been going downhill ever since then. But I just found it interesting in one press report where they talked about the blue between the Seabirds and the Pantherettes.
Yep.
And then immediately afterwards it said, the rivalry continued onto the field where Manly's Dylan Walker was again involved in several fiery exchanges. So the Pantherettes Seabirds thing led to the whole Dylan Walker controversy.
Who's really, I thought, single-handedly maintaining the dislike that a lot of people feel for Manly through his continual going the grope and all those sorts of things.
He's the new Ian Martin.
Yeah, well, can you explain for the listeners who the old Ian Martin is?
there's only one Ian Martin, but Dylan Walker's trying hard. That's his ambition.
Brian Fletcher, not the Brian Fletcher, but the Brian Fletcher, CEO of the Panthers, says he's drawing a long blow if he's complaining about our cheerleaders. As for playing at Allianz Stadium, we finished in front of Canterbury last year and had to play them in week one, not Pepper Stadium. That to me is the ultimate response, isn't it? Well, I had to do it, so therefore you have to cop it. And so he goes, it's not like these rules happened overnight. It's just his club hasn't played finals football in that long. I mean, Is the Manly-Penrith rivalry a thing? I was never really aware of it previously. Reg, have you seen something developing here?
What utter guff. There's no rivalry there. I've never heard of a rival between Manly and Penrith.
Jeff, you look old enough to remember like I do. Wasn't there a result back in the 70s where Manly beat Penrith 70 points to 7?
70 points to 7.
Yeah, where was that game played?
I have no idea. I presume it was Penrith Park.
Yeah. Lotto Land? Lotto Land?
Mind you, Zach Olianic got the 3 points in the best and fairest that day.
Zach Olianic. And if I remember correctly, that was 70 points in the 3-point try era?
But it was 2-point field goals, I think.
Ah, right, right.
No, actually, it wouldn't have been. It would have been 1-point field goals.
Can I put it to you guys, how would you feel if opposition cheerleaders turned up at your local ground? How would you feel, Jeff?
Oh, I think if it was a local home and away game, but I think finals time is special. And I think the whole concept of having the two cheerleaders going head to head,
yep,
I think it's a wonderful thing.
Fair enough. Okay, very good. What about Leichhardt, Chris?
Look, we need as much colour and movement as we can possibly get at Leichhardt. And I've got no issue with it. In fact, I'm taken back. Jeff, you have just published The Great Grand Final Heist by Ian Heads, who was on our show earlier this year. And mm-hmm. I hope he enjoyed himself, did he?
He did indeed, absolutely.
What was the injunction we got about never contacting him again subsequently? Is that just...
No, I think that was prompted because he did that interview a few days after his appearance on the Ray Hadley show on 2GB. And I think Ray Hadley was the one who was actually more upset about the comparison. You guys nailed it.
I tell you what, every week after we've been out on, he goes and have a look at the ratings and see what the impact of Up is on
I'm
the
sure
Hadley
he does.
Ratings, and it's quite
it's devastating.
But in that book, there's a good little anecdote about how the two mascots formed an important part of the pregame entertainment. In fact, I think the mascots and the cheer girls were the pregame entertainment.
They were, and there was the military band. Played because they had to play God Save the Queen before the kickoff.
Right, so there's no Macklemore or anything like that, right?
No. But it's one of the great yarns in football history that, as the story goes, 5 minutes before kickoff, Kevin Humphreys, the Balmain secretary, Balmain CEO, went up to Hal Brown, who was a Balmain centre, who was injured and wasn't playing, and essentially gave him the Tigers mascot to wear and said, "You're running out onto the field." And as Hal Brown, as he tells the story, ran out, leading the Balmain players onto the field. And the South Sydney halfback that day was Bobby Grant, who went on to play for Australia. But Bobby Grant was a Balmain junior, who actually only went to South because Balmain had signed Dave Bolton. But he and Hal Brown were best mates. So Hal Brown in his tight mascot uniform went straight out to see his mate Bobby Grant out in the middle of the SCG. And he says, "Bobby, it's Hal." And as Bobby Grant just says, "Just piss off or I'll belt you." But the other funny part of that story is that Hal Brown tells the story, "Oh, I didn't like it. I didn't want to wear the uniform. I felt like an idiot." But there's actually a film of him running out onto the SCG. And he's having the time of his life. And he was so good at it, I think he would have, you know, he or Dave Bolton would have got the 3 points in the RLPA Player of the Year award.
Well, you raise a very good point there because, I mean, obviously the RLPA negotiations continue apace and they're not resolved. And I believe one of the clauses that the players haven't yet resolved is the mascot clause. Under what conditions could that happen in the modern game? Could Fifita have to be MC Hammerhead at the request of Lloyd Gorman at the Sharks? And how do you think that's going to work out? Do you think that they'll be able to get that mascot clause excluded from the agreement?
Well, I think the issue at the moment is whether Accessories Maloney will ever agree to being a mascot. A mascot. Did I just say it would be a mascot? Did
that really mascot where he's got Steve on the brain.
The proverbial slip of the tongue. He's always on my mind.
Freudian slip.
Did you ever get referred to as Steve Mascot? That's not a bad idea. And I think the other great thing about Hal's story was that he had a bet. He'd had like a recurring, was it shoulder injury or something like that?
That's right, yes.
And he had a bet with a mate that he would, despite the chronic shoulder injury, and let's face it, in 1969, keyhole surgery was just a dream, that he'd get on the ground in the grand final. And I think that's what motivated him to don the mascot suit in the end, and he won the bet. He was on there, albeit only for 5 minutes. This sort of continual carping of teams is, you know, drawing a lot of comment. Andrew Voss has said he's dismayed at the amount of whinging in the sport that I love. I mean, I love Andrew Voss, but I mean, whinging is the lifeblood of this show. We don't want to eliminate whinging, do we, Reg?
It's all we have.
It's all you do.
It's all I do. You take away whinging, I'm just the one percenters. Honestly, please, Vossie, give me a break.
Is Vossie whinging about whinging in general or specific types of whinging?
Great point, Jeff. He's whinging about us having a whinge. Well, you know, when you point a finger, there's four coming back at you, Vossie. Take that, hater.
And just to wrap up on the Seabirds issue, which was one possible cause of the Ferris, if it's Stephen Ferris and Peter's Stoush.
Which we're saying it's definitely Stephen Ferris. Let's rinse the bloke. He's been gone 20 minutes. Listen, he's gone.
I've seen the guy DJ. There's no way the NRL would pay him money to DJ at a big public event like a semi-final. That just couldn't possibly be the case. So I think he was moonlighting as a Manly assistant coach because you wouldn't need any real qualifications to do that job.
I want the footage.
But the official Panthers account responded, "Those Seabirds were just salty. They got schooled by our Pantherettes."
And, salty?
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, that's probably one of the rugby league quotes of the year. Now, there's another possibility that there's a little bit of anxiety around Manly. For those of you unaware of the result of the Manly-Penrith game, it was decided 22 points to 10, but with less than 10 minutes to go, it was locked in at 10-all.
How did Manly feel about that, Chris? How did Trent feel about that?
Well,
happy?
At 10-all, he was ecstatic about the effort of his boys and how well they'd done.
Yeah.
A little bit concerned about the Dylan Walker try being overruled because he was definitively offside, which I think, hello Hawkeye, I think that we've proved that's correct.
Right? No. There was a secret trial and it was declared that he was offside.
Right. But the real concern was around the Tyrone Peachy try, which, as Tyrone said, ball sort of bounced off various things, the referee's head, the sideline, the goalpost, and then Peachy's chest. And then he clutched at the ball, and the issue was, did it come in contact with his finger, ring finger, or indeed fingernail?
And they showed that his finger had kind of moved in there. And Andrew Johns on the Sunday Footy Show was going, well, you know, if anybody says, trust me about this, then I'd ever believe him. So he hasn't convinced Johns.
And Peachy's comment about whether he touched it or not was?
I didn't. He said, trust me, I never touched it. I'm paraphrasing that.
And I think the words were, check the snickometer.
Check the snickometer. That's it.
And again, Jeff, when was the snickometer brought into rugby league? I wasn't aware that that technology was now part of the battery of things they have in the bunker.
Well, I think, as I understand, the snickometer is designed for cricket bats, which are made of wood. So that means Tyrone Peachy is made of wood.
Well, are we saying that Tyrone Peachy is a goose?
He's a witch.
He's a witch, right?
I've seen Monty Python's Holy Grail. He's a witch.
All right, Tyrone, well, you better watch Monty Python, mate. You bloody get your terminology right, son, please.
But anyway, the son of the male model from Mudgee, Kenny Sutcliffe, is clearly Champ Barrett, and he had this to say in the wake of the revelations of the Manly defeat.
Yeah, you could say that. That's probably an understatement. To have our season decided by two video referee calls, in my opinion, that weren't correct, is extremely tough to take. And I have to be careful what I say, but what I would like is the bunker and Tony Archer and the referees to go into my shed and explain to my players that their season is now finished on the back of those two calls. So it's cost us our year. Take nothing away from Penrith, they played well. But I hope that a grand final's not decided like that. That would be a bloody shame.
Well, what I love, because that would be about the 38th time in this season that I've heard the comment, I'd hate to see a grand final decided like that. I like how when someone says that, like a coach, they're sort of saying, this is my unique insight, this is a revelation you've never heard before. How would we feel if a grand final was decided like that, Reg?
I'd feel just fine if Manly lost a grand final. I'd feel really good about it, actually.
I think your dream has come true. And Jeff, I thought there was a lot to unpack there. Obviously, the beautiful backhanded compliment from Trent where he compressed the words Penrith, they played well, into about a nanosecond. But he said, I'd like Tony Archer, the referees, and I'm assuming that's all qualified referees, and the bunker.
And the bunker.
To go into the shed. How would
judges
that actually work?
It would be a slow process. Which means the players would have to hang around after the game for a while. But it would be an interesting conversation.
And there has been thought that really we need to cut out the middleman on all this, reduce the traffic a little bit, from paddock to plate, get the food miles down, that in fact the press conferences going forward should involve the coaches and the referees. Is that something that the NRL should be looking at?
I think a Tony Archer interview after every game. It would just be fantastic.
About the game itself or just about Tony and his life and his general worldview?
I think it would go wherever Phil Rothfield, Paul Kent, all the media there, wherever they took that interview.
So, look, it's been a pretty, pretty tough week for the Seagulls. It's even tougher for the Sharks, which we'll be coming to shortly. I tell you what, though, just one thing is a little aside before we go to a song. FBI is saying yes to marriage equality this week, and
yes.
You'll find on the website, I think, a picture of me and Ferris in situ before he absconded to Brisbane or got arrested outside the Rocks.
When's the big day?
What, between me and Steve?
Yeah.
Well, I'm still waiting.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You guys are living in sin.
I need to be entertained, taking flowers, you know, showing a good time, dinner okay. in a nice restaurant.
Oh, gosh. Fair enough.
And I think the quote from us will be, yes, for marriage equality, finally something that Ian Roberts, Todd Greenberg and Fire Up can agree upon. But in writing about the issue today, there was an interesting quote from our mate Andrew Webster, who had this from reader Peter Leonard of Tweed Heads, who says, I have a confession to make. I have a son who is gay and a son who follows Manly. I worry about one of them. We'll be back in a moment.
Still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild and me in dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes. Changes. Oh, look out, you rock and rollers. Changes.
Welcome back to Fire Up. You've got Amy Mahone at the controls here keeping us together. I am now literally sitting in Ferris's hot seat. It's got me a little bit uncomfortable. Bronco Reg doing his manful best to be part of the action, and Jeff Armstrong classing up the joint. Look, before we get into the team that really wants some changes made to the refereeing system in the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks, we had a text, Reg. Says, I heard the fight between the Manly coaches was over who deserves the credit for Kuiuate's first grade resurgence. Good to have Bronco Reg in over that dud Ferris. Peace, wow. Todd from Ramsgate.
Oh, I love Todd yours. From Ramsgate. He's a legend, Todd from Ramsgate.
Paid commentary. It's like, it's not just confined to Alan Jones and John Laws. We've when got did, cash for comment.
When did Mr. Greenberg later. Move to Thanks Ramsgate?
Yeah, that's right. So listen, Todd's got a lot to think about because, let's face it, for those who were unlucky enough not to be at the Flanagan-Gal press conference after Sharks versus Cowboys last weekend...
What a presser.
It was an amazing event because it's not often that a coach comes in really prepared. And what Flanagan had was 10 points of what the referees got wrong as far as things were concerned with the refereeing on-field performance in a notebook, and he was reading from those particular points.
It was a piece of paper. Sorry to fact check here, but sure. It was a folded up piece of paper that, did you notice how secretive he was at the end of the presser? He made sure that he took that with him from the press conference and skulked off.
And was he conservative here? I mean, I thought I counted about 63 things that the referees got wrong. Did you think he was being calm, Jeff?
I'm not sure. Is the press conference finished? I thought he was still... Well, I mean, how many pieces of paper were there?
Well, he said, go home, Shane. He said, no, I'm just at 60.63 now.
Yeah,
just 47 ago.
The Twittersphere, of course, exploded. Does the Twittersphere do anything other than explode? It's the only thing it seems capable of doing.
It's constantly an explosion.
And I think that Flano and Gal have possibly been done a little bit of a rough deal here because we've got this audio from the press conference about what they said about the refereeing performance, if we can hear that.
Unfortunately, that's football. You know, there's some. I think those things go on all year, and we just got to deal with what we can control. And I thought we did that well.
It's part of the game. You know, the Cowboys didn't stop trying to defend it. Unfortunate for them, and I guess about time we had a bit of luck.
Well, that seems pretty reasonable, doesn't it? These things happen. Look,
he seems pretty calm about it.
Gallen's renowned for his compassion. If he sees both sides of every story.
Sees bloke with stitches on the ground, he just leaves him there. Says, no, thank you. That'd be the wrong thing to rip him out of a bloke's head.
Okay, we were always working on the technical edge here at FBI. That might have been the wrong audio. That might be from another time, another era. I think this is actually what Shane had to say.
Oh, it's disgraceful. Yeah, I know how Trent Barrett feels.
Did the refs start afterwards, and they just fall under the pressure of time?
Well, I think clearly tonight it shows. I've never seen anything like it. You know, Luke Lewis in his whole career is telling me that he's never seen anything like it. And it's disappointing for a game that we're talking about this now. But I had to come and talk about it because it just, in my view, impacted on the result. Definitely impacted on the result. Those things impacted on the result. So, you know, in my view, we need to fix it up. Imagine if that was a grand final. Well, those two won't be there, but...
So am I getting royalties for that? Imagine if it was a grand final. But the question that Shane raised, which I think is an important question, and I'd like both your opinions on that, do you think it impacted on the result?
I do think some of those things impacted on the result. I also think that there was a penalty on where I think it was Gallant. The Cowboys absolutely smashed... the Sharks on, they were on their fifth tackle on about the 15-metre mark. The penalty was awarded and to be a strip. I don't think it was a strip.
This is the regular tally.
Yeah, I think it was a loose carry. Piggyback down the field and then the Sharks scored
Jack
off
Bird.
Jack Bird in the corner off the following set. I thought that was rough.
I know this is not a visual medium, but looking across the panel at you, Reg, you look a lot like Jack Bird.
Yeah, I get this. I get this.
Is this because you've got the Bird beard because he's going to the Broncos?
We're actually the same person. So we've never been seen at the same place.
Jack Bird this is like why it's Bronco Superman. Rich.
That's right.
That's right.
I think it's a pathetic example of fan worship. Do you think it impacted on...
Oh, look, I just heard Reg talk about strips v. loose carries. Yeah. Now,
here we go.
Does this show go to midnight?
Yeah.
If it's your team, I
confidently predict that within the next 2 years, the strip carry will go the way of the scrum penalty.
Is that right?
Because it's just too hard. And we see them every game. You could go through any game, I'm sure that Shane Flanagan does, with Paul Gallen by his side, and you can find a dozen instances of where a strip was a loose carry and a loose carry was a strip. So they'll just do it like the scrum penalty, and you'll drop the ball and you'll get it back and we'll move on.
The major difference is when it's the opposition and they lose the ball, always a loose carry. It's never been a strip in the history of the game.
But if they lose the strip, loose carry delineation, what if the grand final gets decided by then?
Oh, you've got me. I've just lost.
This is such a deep philosophical question, and we'd certainly take your text suggestions on 0409 945 945 about this philosophical question about what if a grand final is decided by that. Now, Flanagan came in with 10 issues with the refereeing as far as Cronulla were being dudded. There's been a lot of criticism in the media that he should have come in with all the areas, such as Bronco Reg was suggesting there, the Latelli loose carry, where the Cowboys were dudded. I mean, there's a lot of controversy whether, in fact, Winterstein had grounded the ball after 3 minutes for the first try. Surely that's the opposition coach's job to come in and whinge about what happened to them, isn't it? Like, Flanagan can't do everything.
I mean, a debate does work upon a period of time for rebuttal, and then you can answer charges. So I think that would be fair. I think Paul Green needs to answer.
Right.
But he just didn't care, actually, and he said, we'll probably just go to the next round and not care about you.
It's not too much pressure on one coach to have to cover both sides, is it, Jeff?
Whinging is an art form.
We don't want to... Voss, we do not want it eliminated.
This is essentially what Andrew Voss said.
Can we have more whinging, please?
No, I think we need good whinging.
Good whinging.
This is right. Where... They talk about Jack Gibson being the Hall of Fame coach because of his tactics and his man management. He was one of the great whingers.
Incredible whinger. Everything that Jack did. You know, they always say, you know, someone's really competitive, they want to win at cards, they want to win at golf. Jack whinged at golf, whinged at cards, whinged at football, whinged as a commentator.
Why is Supercoach Stewart known as the Supercoach?
First of all, whinging. Is he known as the Supercoach?
Oh, absolutely. But it's not for his tactics or his man management, it's for his whinging.
Yeah, Ricky
That's
Stewart.
Why he didn't get fined $10,000 earlier in the season, where the guys who aren't good at whinging, like McGregor and Green, they did get fined.
And not as good as whingers.
No, that's it. This is how coaches should be appointed.
I mean, Ricky will be sitting a little uneasy in his station, not only by failing to make the playoffs this season, but also, like, his all-time figure is 120K. And Flano, well, T-Baz got whacked for 20, but Flano got whacked for 30 because after you've gone in straight into the press conference, you're full of emotion, you're disappointed, it's cost you your season, you probably to a degree understood that you will have a crack at the refs like he did, but then you get a chance to cool down. In fact, the Cronulla have a specific email they send out to their fans called the cool down after a game to sort of, with a little bit of measured time to reflect, say, okay, have I gone too far? Did I push the line? So they have their own internal broadcast where Flano, having had a time to consider his comments and feel whether he said the right thing or not, he had this to say.
It was Shane Flanagan for the Crown Bet cool down. Mate, you pretty much said it all in the press conference. That things just didn't happen for us, didn't go our way. The calls were, I don't want to say horrendous, but just didn't happen for us.
The calls were horrendous, Rob. They were awful, they were wrong. You know, clearly everyone could see him at home, could see him here at the ground. You know, when in a close semi, in this time of year, close semi-final, you know, you can't rise above that. You know, you can maybe rise against one or two that were wrong, but there was just too many of them. Crucial, that should have been a penalty. We kicked the goal, game over. We're getting ready to go to a semi-final.
You probably don't really care too much about them, but Cowboys, what do you think about them going forward next week?
I couldn't give a rat's, Rob.
Thanks for joining us, Shane.
Thanks, mate.
All class, Fano. We've absolutely loved your work. We're going to miss him for the rest of the season.
Oh, I miss him like a hole in the head.
Are we going to miss the Sharks? Now, we were going to have this...
Please.
With the whole country going to DEFCON 3 with another missile firing over Japan this morning. The FBI phone lines are down. The Central Intelligence Network in Australia needs to keep all the lines clear because we're, let's face it, a nerve centre of what's happening geopolitically.
Thanks a lot, Kim.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught the show during the week on Four Corners about how his half-brother, Kim Jong Nam, copped it in Kuala Lumpur Airport, but it was an eye-opener to say the least.
Oh, jeez.
And I sleep a little less comfortably at night as
Me
a result
too, Chris.
Of that. But we were going to talk to Adam Newman from the Sharkcast at this particular point in time, who's been right in the centre, or the eye, dare I say it, of the storm.
Terrific.
But we can't get to him on the phones today. We'll try and get him at a later stage. And let's face it, I think Sharks fans probably need another week or so to cool down.
Oh, they've got another 49 years before the next premiership. They'll be fine.
Oh, too soon. It'll be too soon.
Now, there's been a lot of views expressed about this particular incident, and I think it's most important that after all the Flanagan carry on and the gal we was dudded and the cool down and whatever, that wiser heads prevail. And when we think wiser heads, we think James Accessories Maloney.
Accessories would we be, just out of interest? Like a bangle or a chain or something? Like, the Fire Up crew here, so far removed from relevance and all of that, where do we sit in the accessory chain?
I always look at you, Reg, and think battery's not included. But
battery, empty remote.
Yeah. I'm not sure, because what Maloney actually said in that famous interview, or infamous interview with Andrew Webster, was... the players are your most important commodity. Without them, there is no game. Everyone who works around it are just accessories. So he wasn't sledging the fans because they don't work. So the question is, are we working here now, or are we just...
I think we're getting sledged, Jeff.
Well, I think...
Do you feel sledged?
Oh, I personally did, yeah. I think accessories went for me really in a bad way.
I feel like he was really giving us a rock-hard sledge there.
That's all right. I don't mind being regarded as a handbag of the game. But Maloney's sort of, I think, looking for redemption right now, because let's face it, he needs it. So he's come out in the wake of all the Cronulla controversy, and he's had this to say. As soon as you start criticising refs, they're in a tough position. That stems down to how referees in junior footy and grassroots are treated. The refs have got to be respected. I mean, can you believe this? The refs have got to be respected. It's a dangerous precedent when you start having shots at them with where it leads to down the path. Then there's the other side when people want to see some accountability from the referees. That's the issue for people. I don't know which people.
Geez.
Possibly accessories, I guess.
I think you read this better than accessories read it.
Can I be serious here for a second?
No.
Okay, yep, fair enough. Yep, back in my box.
Yeah, no, have a crack. Amaze us.
When Flano in that press conference says, oh, please, you know, professional foul, please, penalty, didn't he watch the other game where Munster was sent off in the Para-Melbourne game?
Yeah.
They were sending blokes.
Yeah,
mate.
That's right.
That's what was happening.
He's got no basis. And he goes, you know what, in the end, he's probably agreeing with you, Reg, which would be the first time anyone agrees with you, except someone's texted in and said, I'm all for Bronco Reg being on Fire Up. We need more commentary from fans with team actually in the finals. This is Greg from Coogee.
I love you, Greg.
You've got some sort of Illuminati going on here. This is an unprecedented reaction.
I'll pay you later, guys. Thanks very much.
Flano says, I'm a big... Sorry, Flano. No, it can't be possibly Flano, can it? Maloney says, I'm a big believer that the refs don't decide footy games regardless of how things go. Now, this is obviously why he wants to leave Cronulla, right? Because he's completely at odds with his coach. This is worse than Moylan and Griffin.
He doesn't want to leave Cronulla. He just wants to get paid his due. He wants his $1 million.
Just wants money.
Well, I don't know if you're right there, Jeff, because not only is he at odds with Flano about the impact referees have on the game. Did they have an impact there? There's also something that I think comes from your personal allegiances to the game about what's happening at Cronulla next year. Personnel's changing. Who's arriving? Who are you excited about?
I'm not sure that the rugby league, of, you know, the people at head office realise just how unpopular Cronulla is.
I don't feel like they understand.
I mean, at the start of the start of the year, they had Gallen out there as sort of, you know, the face of the game.
Oh, what a face!
People don't like Gallen. They don't like accessories. They don't like Fifita. You know, and next season,
I like Fifita.
They'll have Dougs there.
Oh my goodness,
Dougs will fit right in.
Look, speaking of Fifita, the kids copped a bit of criticism. But
oh, a little
with
bit.
One tackle to go. Am I wrong here? Did they not need a field goal? And he's gone right, done a little bit of footwork and pushed a flick pass? No wonder the Sharks were down. Now, you're a Dougs fan. You're a St. George fan.
I'm a St. George fan.
Is that correct?
I am a St. George fan.
So you must be shattered that Dougs is going, right?
No. No, look, Dougs, when he came to St. George, he actually played some very, very good footy for St. George. But over the last two seasons, he's been pretty ordinary. I think he scored 6 tries in 2 years for St. George in 34 games, whereas, you know, I think Tedesco scored 19 tries in the same 2 years.
He had to bring up Tedesco, didn't he?
Dugan did an interview this week. I think it was in the Herald, I'm not sure, but it was just magnificent. It's got the page worth of cliches. It's just some sensational stuff. We're talking about catch 22 situations, and he's going to put his best foot forward, and he just dribbles.
Well,
it just sort of reflects his play, and I just can't help thinking how well he'll fit in at Cronulla next year.
I think it'll be great. And also, you could see in that interview a little bit of I Need to Be Loved, which, of course, is the plight of the modern player. He said, look, I admit that I stuffed up when I missed the bus for the Penrith game, but compared to the cruise...
It was blown out of all proportion, though.
That's right. And he said, compared to the cruiser incident on the roof 5 years ago, that was 20 times as worse. Would that be right, missing the buses about 20 cruises or... 20 buses.
It was only a game St. George had to win.
Semi-finals on the line. Yeah.
And I think he said he read the memo wrong or something.
Josh Turgan, great bloke who never gets injured. Said nobody ever.
And as I look across the panel, Reg, I notice you also seem to have a number of tats emerging a la Dugan. So you've got a foot in both camps, have you, with Bird and Dugan? Bird leaving, Dugan arriving?
I'm lined up to get my Josh Dugan tat on my left bicep here. Des and Troy, together destroy.
We should probably briefly touch on the upcoming finals this weekend. And, of course, the big game on Saturday is the Parramatta Eels versus the North Queensland Cowboys. What are your views, boys, on who might win that?
Well, I'm a St. George supporter. I go back to the 70s. And the team that I hated in the 70s was Para. I hated Mick Cronin. I hated Ray Price. I hated them all.
Zip Zip Man?
Hate.
How could you hate Steve Eller?
Couldn't stand Zip
Zip. Eric Groth, senior?
Played for Parra. No, you just disliked
Stephen Edge, you probably hated him.
Hated Stephen Edge for about 5 or 6 years. And so I haven't tipped Parra in a tipping comp since. I never will.
I love that irrationality.
And that's just how it is. So I think North Queensland are absolute specials.
I really hope North Queensland beat Parra. I've got no beef with Parra. I think they, if they win this game comprehensively, I think they can win the comp, actually, Parramatta, like based on what I saw out of that Melbourne game. I felt like they were a little bit ill-disciplined at the end, and I felt like there were a couple of fluky tries in that Melbourne-Para game. I thought Para, watching that, I felt they could win the comp out of that.
You're giving...
But I hope my sentimental favourite will be the Cowboys.
But you've just given a hope to a lot of people out there who are long-suffering Parramatta fans, Reg. That's
since
cruel.
86, yeah,
I think
a long
the Cowboys
time.
Will rip their heart out because it turns out the Cowboys are the team they can't kill. The Cowboys are the walking dead. Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied.
Trying to find her, she's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she had to have the colour of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there.
Rightio, we ready to fire up? I think we are.
I think we are ready to fire up. And
speak for yourself.
Yeah.
I'm fired up.
Dan / Stephen Ferris is currently in custodial environment around two things. The fact that he's sold out and is DJing for the NRL, and also he's been throwing a couple down at the Orient. And who hasn't thrown a couple down at the Orient over the time? Amy Mulhern, I think, has on many occasions been found at the Rocks wanting in these particular circumstances. She's giving me a nod. Bronco Reg, how many times have you been thrown in the clink?
Too many to remember, Chris. Too many to remember, mates.
Jeff, yourself?
No, I've never been to the Rocks, never.
And speaking of Jeff, we're very, very lucky to have Jeff Armstrong from Stoke Hill Press today. Jeff has worked as a writer, editor, or publisher on more than 100 books on sport. Count them, 100. That's more points than Flano had to whinge about, including more than 40 on cricket. Yet you're still smiling this morning. Why is that, Jeff?
Oh, no. Book publishing, as long as you don't want to make any money, it's a really good, fun game.
Would you be embarrassed if I read out a paragraph about you?
Only if I wrote it.
In 2014, Jeff was arrested. No, sorry. Jeff established Stoke Hill Press to publish The Night the Music Died by Ian Heads, the story of Western Division's shock victory in Rugby League's inaugural AMCO Cup. What year was that?
74.
74. 12 months later, Stoke Hill Press released Richie, the Man Behind the Legend, edited by Norm Tasker and Ian Heads, tribute to the great cricket player and commentator. And both books achieved bestseller status. That's on the New York Times bestseller list, I'm assuming, Jeff?
The AMCO Cup book, certainly.
Great. Richie was shortlisted for the Cross Cricket Book of the Year Award in the UK, and in 2016 you published the highly acclaimed Never Before, Never Again by Larry Ryder. Now, we had Larry Ryder on here. It was probably the worst day I've ever had here on Fire Up to have Larry Ryder, my mate John Osborne, and Stephen Ferris gloating about an era that's basically forgotten, the 11 St George Premierships. I only take comfort in the fact that it will never happen again. And then this year's been a big year for you, Jeff, because you've published Touchstones by our very good friend of the show, Steve Mascott.
Steve Mascott.
And as I said, a book that should be a prescribed HSC text for all New South Wales school children. The great grand final heist about Balmain winning the grand final 11-2 against South Sydney in 1969. It's great to have you here. Tell us about what's happening in Stoke Hill world.
Well, at the moment we've got those two books out, so we're very busy trying to convince people who don't... Because the tragedy with books these days is people don't read them, and it's sport books especially. It's become almost a game where we're making Father's Day and Christmas presents.
Right.
And the two books that I've published this year, the Touchstones by Steve Mascott and the great grand final heist by Ian Heads, they're both really good reads. So the battle we're having is to convince people to go out and actually read them. But the trouble is, when you've got, you know, journalists of the calibre of Phil Rothfield and Paul Kent writing rugby league 7 days a week, there's a lot of league to read. So.
Well, we tried to get Buzz this morning. We only got Bronco Reg, so you can see the problem. They're in such great demand. Have you gone lateral? Have you been speaking to Gladys Berejiklian about getting the great grand final heist into the curriculum?
I've tried to, but both meetings to see Gladys, I've been stuck in traffic and couldn't get there in time. That's Sydney.
Now, can you tell us, when I hear The Night the Music Died, I immediately go to American Pie and Don McLean and The Day the Music Died with Buddy Holly and Big Bopper and dot, 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 and the air crash. What's The Night the Music Died about? We talked about the inaugural AMCO Cup Western Division. Fill us in with a little bit of the detail.
In 30 seconds, the AMCO Cup was an idea to have a Wednesday night knockout competition involving the 12 Sydney clubs, a couple of teams from Brisbane, a team from New Zealand, and the country divisions in just a straight knockout format.
Yep.
It was launched in 1974. Actually went on at 9 o'clock, number 96 at 8:30, and then the league live from Leichhardt at 9.
Is that right, 9 o'clock?
Because yeah.
If we wanted to, we could talk number 96 all night, I mean, in point of actual fact. I mean, I'd really like that show, but 9 o'clock? How was I watching it as a kid?
Well, this is it. I wasn't allowed to watch it in the first year.
What, 96 or the AMCO Cup?
No, the 96, no problem, but the mum and dad said, off to bed now.
You can't watch this rugby league, it'll pollute your mind.
You've seen Joe and Abigail, now off to bed. But, in the first year, Western Division, who were, I think they got flogged about 30-2 in a country divisional game before their first game.
Yep.
But then Western Division, coached by Johnny King, the great Johnny King.
St George Gray.
Still the smartest rugby league man I've ever met.
Is that right?
And one of the, like a lot of people, one of the really, really nice guys of footy, as most old champions are.
But Jeff, remember, never before, never again.
It could happen again.
Not in my lifetime.
If we can get Willie Peters back to coach at St George, we're half a chance. And so Western Division beat Auckland, beat Canterbury, drew with Manly, but beat them on a count back, and then beat Penrith in the final to win the game. Huge crowd. They actually made the AMCO Cup. It could well have been a competition that flopped because a lot of the clubs weren't interested in playing in it. But Western Division won it. It was a genuine Cinderella story, if you like. If I can sound like Cameron Smith for a moment. And
thankfully, you don't look like him.
No. And then on the 40th anniversary, Ian wanted to write the story, and no one would publish it. So we formed Stoke Hill Press to publish it as a one-off, and the book was very, very successful. It struck a chord with all the guys of our generation who remember what was a unique footy story.
And who was TV Ted Ellery?
TV Ted was a He was a player from Lithgow, and Johnny King brought him on as a battering ram in the second half replacement. And TV Ted would run on. The first game he played was against Auckland on a quagmire at Leichhardt. And TV Ted came out in his beautiful sparkling gear, bandaged from head to toe, bald head, shining in the floodlights, and made an immediate impact. And it became almost there a calling card for Western Division that TV Ted would come in the second half. The only shame about that with TV Ted, he was apparently a bloody good player.
Yep.
And he's sort of remembered as this cameo figure.
Right.
But he was and a great man, a great Labor man, actually. Became a really strong unionist in Western New South Wales. And when he died a few years ago, his funeral was a huge event.
And look, Reg, you probably are old enough to remember the AMCO Cup, but there were a couple of innovations that I remember. Well, first of all, my recall is that Ray Warren was the lead commentator. Was that from the get-go?
No, originally it was Kerry Buckridge.
Right.
And then Ray took over in that first season. Ray had been calling the footy on 2GB.
Right.
And he took over in that first season, and he's still with us today.
I mean, that really was the start of his TV career, yeah?
Of his TV career, absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And his expert commentator was Keith Barnes. Great, I remember.
Keith Barnes was there, yeah. I'm just trying to remember. I'm not sure if Keith was there in the first season. Yeah.
It's my one impersonation I can do. I thought Alan McMahon played very well for the Balmain side today. That was, I used to love Keith Barnes. And then, of course, we're talking about rugby league's greatest whinger other than the angry ant, Ricky Stewart, and that being Jack Gibson. He brought the idea of putting the black under the eyes because of the TV lights, because night football was a bit of a novelty at that stage, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely, yeah. The whole concept, that it was introduced in 1974 on the verge of colour telly coming in, and it was a big hit. And so you have to remember, in those days, there was very, very little footy on television. There was the ABC had a game on Saturday, and then Seven's Big League on Sunday. That was live rugby league. Well, that was TV replays. There was no live rugby league. So this was the one live footy on the telly.
Yeah, it was manna for heaven for me as a kid. And in 1976, my parents bought the first colour television, which my parents would like to push the edges. They got a Nord Mendy. Not a huge seller. It wasn't like a Rank Arena or something like that. It was German technology. And the first game that week that I saw on the colour TV was Canterbury, but they were playing East Tigers from the Brisbane competition, same jersey as Balmain. So I could imagine that there was my team coming to live in colour. Mm. And just briefly, you're a St George fan because why? Suffered as a kid?
No, my dad bought me a Billy Smith jersey when I was about five, and then I got the Billy Smith footy card. And I grew up in Eastwood, which is not rugby league territory. So
TG Milner territory?
No, all my mates are, yeah, absolutely. All my mates are either Manly South or St George fans because they were the gun teams in the late 60s, early 70s. Yep. And because my dad wasn't, he was a rugby union man, so he didn't know a lot about footy. So I was a St George fan and still am.
Look, I'd ask you about the 99 grand final, but I'm not a cruel man. Yes. Look, Reg, we're going to come back after the break and in the last segment examine what the modern rugby league team does when they suffer from a huge defeat, something that possibly the Broncos will be suffering in just a few hours' time.
Oh, no way, no way. Just to pipe in here, Jeff, I've just really important. I've got a really great book that I've been thinking about writing for a number of years. Actually,
excellent. I love these conversations.
Here we go.
It's
sorry about this, Jeff.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
It's about the '97 Broncos called Super League '97, the year we smashed everybody. I was thinking about some kind of an advance of $1.2 to $2.2 million. I've got several paraphrase quotes from Mickey Hancock. And a great story about how Mickey Hancock signed my Broncos bag at the Ecker in 1997. What do you think, Jeff?
Oh, I'm currently in developing a book about the World Club Challenge from 97.
Okay.
So the two books would probably conflict, so I don't know whether that would work, but I could recommend you to any number of fine publishers.
I'll take 50 cents and a hot dog if it was a maybe.
Okay, we're signed.
Look at this way, Jeff. I think Ian Heaps can put you onto a good lawyer to get that injunction to keep these sorts of pitches away from you. Yeah, you're on fire up.
Mick Hancock got me.
The three knees. You're on fire up. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Fire Up. Now, Reg, I was saying before the break that we're going to have a look at what the modern rugby league team does when they've suffered a big defeat. Now, there's been a bit in the Daily Astonisher this week about a rather unfortunate exchange going on between former West Tiger, current New Zealand Warrior, but maybe not for much longer, Bodine Thompson, and a relationship he had. We don't want to go into the minutiae of that. We've covered so many sex scandals here, it just doesn't get ratings anymore, and we've got to try and get some ground back on Hadley. But it is interesting. He met the woman that he's involved the issues with at the Santa Fe Gold Strip Club, which I know you've been there up in Townsville. Your membership's due for renewal soon.
They've got my Polaroid on the back wall now. They don't even let me in, unfortunately.
Well, it's understandable. And this was after the Tigers were up in Townsville in 2015 and been pumped, if I can use that word, at 1300 Smiles Stadium, 64 points to 6. Now, the Tigers repaired to the Santa Fe Gold Strip Club. I think you said before, what have they got?
What have they got, a golf club?
It's not a golf club. It's Santa Fe Gold, Reds. Gold.
Gold. Okay.
Is this the right environment to go over the tapes, look at what you've done wrong defensively, that you've got your A and B defenders in the wrong thing, you haven't got the right shapes, the
long,
right
hard
angles?
Look at yourself in the mirror kind of thing.
What do you learn as a rugby league team from a strip club?
Oh, I think the strippers are enjoyable to watch.
There is the keen insider that we provide here on Fire Up.
Rugby League funded. Bronco Reg says strippers are good to look at.
Funnily enough, the text line is not ringing from analysts wanting you to join part of their expert commentary team.
I got a Sam Thaiday pass from Hooker there.
Jeff, I imagine you've got a hypothetical view on this, not ever having been.
My attitude to league sex scandals, they have to beat the pleasure machine.
Oh, well.
And this
the
one doesn't.
The pleasure machine.
So I have no comment.
Oh, Solomon Hamono. Let me tell you.
Can we hear about the pleasure machine?
Well, that was the erstwhile girlfriend of Solomon Hamono, and I think she might have gone back to England or something. And
she did, and I think Anthony Mundine get involved in some...
Facilitated in getting Solomon on a plane. He briefly played for us. He played for Canterbury and Manly and so forth, and he now pursued a pretty successful boxing career. Hello, Paul Gallen. You know Gallen. Gallen's primarily upset about the fact that SBW is ducking him, you know?
Yeah. You know. Is SBW just going like, I don't care about Paul Gallen. Paul Gallen's not good enough for me?
Well,
I take it.
That's what I think's got him up in arms. But Hamono was a good footy player, good back rower, good second phase player.
I don't know whether he ever went to the Santa Fe Gold Club.
Strip Club, Well, they've got a rugby league division there now, so, I mean, it's something to keep in our pockets. Look, just briefly, doing the round the grounds, of course, the Rugby League Players Association Awards were held this week at the Star. The players' champion, friend of the show, James Teddy Tedesco, no doubt in my mind, everybody happy with that result?
Oh, look, he's a very, very good player, but the system they use to elect the winner where everyone has to vote for players from the other team, I think they should rename the award the Terry Hughes Medal for the guy who won the Rothmans Medal the first year, who was a good player in a bad team. And Tedesco certainly fits that bill this year.
Are you suggesting people like Conrad Horrell did not deserve their place on the team?
Who's that West Tigers winger who got in the...
David Nofaluma, he's playing it.
He's twice the player of the Melbourne wingers.
And terrific touch that we followed. We're all in our tuxedos and tennis shoes here this morning in the studio looking $1 million.
Your tux looks great.
Yeah.
The purple is really nice.
Amy's tux is better.
Yeah, Amy's tux is the best. That's true.
It's the little cummerbund thing that gets the thing happening.
I got a pink one.
Very quickly, your boys up against the Penny Panthers, maybe being accompanied. Stephen Ferris, by the way, played Kraftwerk's Space Lab at the NRL last weekend to much blank faces, or many blank faces. How do you see your boys going today, Rich?
I think we'll win in a tight one, but I'm not super confident. I'm a bit worried with Boyd being out. I think we're going to be a bit disorganised there. My favourite bit of the lead up to this was Ben Hunt coming out and saying Cleary is the best thing since, or is going to become Thurston in the next 20 minutes. He's the greatest thing ever. Give him $10,000-$12,000 a second. Just unbelievable talking up of the opposition. Yeah, shameless.
That's who you're getting at the Dragons next year. You're thrilled by Benny Hunt coming on board?
Well, Ben Hunt is already the greatest halfback to play for St George since Billy Smith. Well, actually, it's funny. I thought he was...
What about Mark Shulman? Come on now.
No, I was thinking about Willie Peters, actually.
Well, yeah, well, you know, he's got his own trouble. He's got
maybe
more trouble.
Maybe that was the cause of the argument. They said you're not in the same class as Josh McCrone. And...
Oh, but you hear, by the way, McCrone has just gone in. I mean, he's off to the Wolfpack, I think.
That's right, yeah.
But he's gone in for one of the most painful things in rugby league, a double groin reconstruction.
Oh.
I didn't know you could get one of those. I'm booked in myself. You got a tip, Jeff?
Oh, I think Brisbane by 30.
Wow.
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 Well, look, we're just about done here on Fire Up and Bronco Reg. You haven't passed the audition. You've got something to say? Because I was going to say you haven't passed the audition, so you can do a late save.
No, I failed. But I just had a text from Russell Crowe just now saying that the sequel to Romper Stomper has been greenlit. Shane Flanagan and Trent Barrett ref bashes after Gavin Badger and Ashley Klein. Will be made this year.
And you will be playing the part of Jack Bird, is that right?
I will be playing the part of Jack Bird and any part in it. That is correct.
Jeff, it's been a real thrill for us to have you here. I mean, you do magnificent work. Are there any things apart from Reg's book in the pipeline?
The only book I have, I know that I'm publishing next year, it has nothing to do with rugby league. It's a biography of Cecil Healey, who was a gold medal winner in 1912, who then died in World War I. Larry's writing it, Larry Ryder, and it's going to be magnificent. But it's nothing to do with rugby league.
And what was Cess's sport, chosen sport?
Cess was a swimmer.
Right.
Gold medalist in a relay at Stockholm in 1912.
Stockholm.
Quite extraordinary story, actually.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back at some stage, Jeff, because we can't get enough rugby league written words into our life. And if we're not talking it, we want to read it. We should just finish on a good note because, let's face it, Eels, Cowboys, Penrith, Broncos, who's interested?
Oh, jeez.
The great news has come down the wires that the Canberra Raiders, do you remember them? They were in the competition.
Who? It's Supercoaches team.
Supercoaches team.
Is Dennis
Carlos Schmearsom, game's greatest thinker, Ricky Stewart. That the Victor the Viking, speaking of Steve Mascott, has spent 35 years putting smiles on the faces of young fans, and the Canberra Raiders have returned the favour to the man behind the mask of Victor the Viking. They've made Tony Wood a life member at the Malmeninga Medal. Say that, Triple M. That's interesting. MMM, yeah.
MMM.
On Monday night. But he's no plans. This is the good news. He's got no plans of hanging up the suit and wants to push on for at least another 5 years. He first became Victor the Viking in 1983 and has more than 600, count them, NRL games behind him since becoming a piece of the furniture at Canberra Stadium, which is a very dangerous thing to do at Canberra Stadium because we know what Ricky likes to do to chairs on the sideline. He was caught completely unaware by the honour, which included a gold ring that only a few select people have, including Raiders legend Malmeninga. He had a couple of interesting observations to say in getting the award, didn't he, Reg?
My favourite line from Tony is where he says, "I've had a couple of health issues, but that's all good now. I'm so glad that I have heart attacks during the off-season so I get time to recover." What a guy.
Jeff, I think we can all agree that that's the best time to get a heart attack?
Yes. That's all I can say. I'm just thinking, would Tony have gone up to get the award dressed as Victor the Viking?
Of course he would.
And yeah, if he did, was he wearing a tuxedo and running shoes?
And let's hope he didn't go up with a hat off, because there's nothing more upsetting, as you said, last year when the Sharks finally won against all predictions.
Did they win?
Yes. MC Hammerhead lost his head at the grand final blowing of the final siren, and kids all over the Shire were traumatised. And we don't want any more of that. Look, you've been on Fire Up. Thanks to Amy for piling us. Pat for doing all the great audio. Bronco Reds, you've been a thrill to have on board.
I've loved it.
May it never happen again. And Jeff, a particular pleasure for you here. You've been on Fire Up. I'm Chris Gull. We wish everyone to have their heart attacks in the off-season. Go the football.
So tune in again next week when we invite a veritable breadline of nobodies and wannabes to flesh out another rip-snorting roundup of rugby league shenanigans, slander and smut right here at the home of radio's most fatuous footy confab. Fire!